Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is meant for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, Dorothy Gundy brings us a story about a 12-year-old American skateboarding entrepreneur. We will also hear part of this week's What It Takes podcast with Alice Winkler. This week's podcast is about American writer and filmmaker Nora Ephron. As always, we end the program with an American story. This week, we have Pecos Bill, an American folktale. But first, China says that it has been forced to take unnecessary counterattack against the United States because of recent U.S. import taxes on Chinese products. The U.S. government recently placed tariffs on Chinese imports worth about $34 billion. American President Donald Trump approved import taxes of 25% on more than 800 Chinese products. The tariffs began Friday. China criticized what it called trade bullying and warned the tariffs could start worldwide market unrest. The Chinese government also warned it would react immediately and strongly to new tariffs. The Chinese Commerce Ministry said Friday the Chinese side promised not to act first. But it said that in order to defend the central interests of the country and people, it was forced to make a necessary counterattack. Ministry spokesman Gao Feng told reporters Thursday that China will not back down to threats. He also noted that about $20 billion of the goods that will be subject to the U.S. tariffs are supported by foreign investors, including many from the United States. Trump has threatened tariffs on an additional $450 billion worth of Chinese goods if China continues with its promise of tariffs on U.S. exports. Growing trade tension worries some top officials of the U.S. Central Bank. They are concerned that trade disputes will prevent investment that supports economic growth. The concerns were made public Wednesday in notes from the most recent policy discussion by leaders of the U.S. Federal Reserve. The Chinese embassy in Washington has warned its citizens of traveling to the United States as trade tensions increase. Chinese tourists were warned of issues such as high medical costs, the possibility of gun violence and robberies, seizures by border agents, and natural disasters. Public security in the United States is not good, the embassy said in a statement last week. On Tuesday, reporters asked China's foreign ministry spokesman, Liu Kang, if the timing of China's travel warning was politically influenced. Kang said the embassy was required to issue the alert because the summer is the high point of the travel season for Chinese people visiting the United States. China often issues warnings for Chinese travelers, usually in areas suffering from war or other problems. But some foreign governments have accused China of actions such as limiting tourism among Chinese to settle political or trade disputes. China denies these accusations. The United Nations reported last year that since 2012, China has led the world in the number of tourists who travel to other countries. The UN said Chinese tourists spent $261 billion in foreign countries in 2016. That is more than twice the amount that travelers from the United States spent.
Carson Kropfel is an inventor, business owner, and environmental activist. He enjoys the excitement of surfing. In addition to riding the waves, he likes riding his skateboard. Kropfel is a very hard-working 12-year-old. You heard right. The San Clemente, California boy just completed 7th grade. And school had a lot to do with the creation of his company. His story is proof that necessity is truly the mother of invention. Carson had enjoyed skating for years. He liked to use his skateboard to go to places, including school. But over time, he grew increasingly frustrated that he had no place to store his board once he arrived. As a student, he could not change the size of his locker, but he realized he might be able to change the shape of his skateboard. And from that small desire, a business was born.
I have a skateboard company called Lockerboard, and what I do is I take recycled skateboard decks and reshape them to fit inside of backpacks and lockers.
Carson first just made a shorter skateboard in the shape of a square for himself.
But then my parents told me I had to clean and do chores to pay for my surf contest and surf lessons. But I hate to clean, so I asked them if I could try selling my locker boards instead.
Carson's parents not only said yes, they agreed to help him make it happen. They searched around for the best tools for creating skateboards. But he says one tool made his mother a little nervous.
Then we used a table saw, but my mom didn't like that because I was making skateboards by myself. And my mom was like, I'm not sure if this is safe. And my dad was like, it's perfectly fine. And then a board shot back and hit him straight in the stomach.
Carson made his first sales in the room where students ate at his school. He put a few skateboards on a table, and his schoolmates started buying them up. Within months, Carson had an agreement with a manufacturer. The young man says he has now sold about 700 skateboards in under 2 years of operation. His skateboards come in a number of shapes and designs. Each one costs around $100. But not all the profit goes to Carson. Some money goes to a non-profit group that supports the health and well-being of a place close to his heart.
I donate $1 for every locker board sold to Ocean Unite because they're focused on ocean conservation.
Carson's hometown of San Clemente sits along a beautiful coastal area of the Pacific Ocean. And Carson, the surfer, wants the ocean to stay that way. The young business owner says he is not exactly sure what he will do when he grows up. But he sure will stay busy.
I kind of want to be doing what I'm doing now, being an entrepreneur. If it's not lockerboard, I'm pretty positive I'm going to be creating something. And I'm going to be an activist, traveling the world, supporting ocean conservation and how we could help our Earth. And traveling the world, skating and surfing, because I am an athlete.
I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Next up is What It Takes.
I love that you get cold when it's 71 degrees out. I love that it takes you an hour and a half to order a sandwich. I love that you get a little crinkle above your nose when you're looking at me like I'm nuts.
I would never play you a movie clip that revealed the very end of a movie. That would be obnoxious. Normally. But if it's When Harry Met Sally, you've absolutely definitely already seen it. So no need for a spoiler alert. If you haven't seen it, well, shame on you anyway. Put down this podcast, go rent the movie, and then come back to listen.
That is just like you, Harry. You say things like that and you make it impossible for me to hate you. And I hate you, Harry. I really hate you.
When Harry Met Sally is one of the best romantic comedies of all time, written by one of the best and funniest writers of all time, Nora Ephron. She started out as a journalist, but went on to write essays, novels, plays, movies, basically anything that allowed her to put pen to paper. Her parents were both Hollywood screenwriters, so she was born to it. Her mother's constant refrain was, "Everything is copy." Her parents laid all the groundwork, but her muse, as she told the audience listening raptly to her speech at the Academy of Achievement Summit, her muse was Lois Lane, love interest of Superman and girl reporter at the Daily Planet. By high school, Nora Ephron's path was clear.
And so I took a class in journalism, and I had the greatest teacher that I ever had, and I want to tell you about what happened to me in that class because it changed my life. It was the first day of class, and if any of you have taken journalism, you know that what they do is they teach you how to write a lead. They teach you how to start writing the story. And they go to the blackboard and they write who, what, where, why, when, and how on the blackboard. And that's what has to be in the first paragraph of any decent newspaper story. And then what they normally do, and what Mr. Charles Sims, my journalism teacher, did, is that he dictated a set of facts to us, and then we were supposed to go and write the lead to the story. So he said something like this: the principal of Beverly Hills High School, that's where I went to school, announced today that the faculty of the high school will travel to Sacramento on Thursday for a colloquium in new teaching methods. Speaking there will be anthropologist Margaret Mead, University of Chicago president Robert Maynard Hutchins, and some third person, blah, blah, blah. So we all sat at our typewriters, and we kind of inverted the story. And it went, you know, Margaret Mead, Robert Maynard Hutchins, and a third person will address the faculty Thursday in Sacramento at a colloquium on new teaching methods the principal announced today. And we all were very proud of ourselves, and we turned in our leads, and Mr. Sims threw them in the trash and said, the lead to the story is, there will be no school Thursday. It was the electric light going on in the cartoon. I just fell in love with journalism at that moment. I thought, oh my God, it's about the point. Who, what, when, and why, and how, and where, and all of that stuff. Forget it if you do not get the point of the story. And I cannot tell you, you know, the fun of journalism, the joy of journalism, in addition to the fact that it takes you into worlds that you would never, ever go into, is that you are constantly having to puzzle out what this all means. What is the point of it? And I became a journalist. I became a newspaper reporter and then a magazine writer. And I was in love with the point. I was in love with the truth. I believed in the truth. I was like if I had a religion, that was it.
You can hear the rest of this episode on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Today we tell a traditional American story called A Tall Tale. A tall tale is a story about a person who is larger than life. The descriptions in the story are exaggerated, much greater than in real life. Long ago, the people who settled in undeveloped areas in America first told tall tales. After a hard day's work, people gathered to tell each other funny stories. Pecos Bill was a larger-than-life hero of the American West. No one knows who first told stories about Pecos Bill. Cowboys may have invented the stories. Others say Edward O'Reilly invented the character in stories he wrote for The Century magazine in the early 1900s. The stories were collected in a book called The Saga of Pecos Bill, published in 1923. Another writer, James Cloyd Bowman, wrote an award-winning children's book called Pecos Bill, The Greatest Cowboy of All Time. The book won the Newbery Honor in 1938. Pecos Bill was not a historical person, but he does represent the spirit of early settlers in the American West. His unusual childhood and extraordinary actions tell about people who believed there were no limits to what they could do. Now, here is Barbara Klein with our story.
Pecos Bill had one of the strangest childhoods a boy ever had. It all started after his father decided that there was no longer enough room in East Texas for his family.
"Pack up, Ma," he cried. "Neighbors moving in 50 miles away. It's getting too crowded."
So they loaded up a wagon with all their things. Now, some say they had 15 children, while others say 18. However many there were, the children were louder than thunder. And as they set off across the wild country of West Texas, their mother and father could hardly hear a thing. Now, as they came to the Pecos River, the wagon hit a big rock. The force threw Little Bill out of the wagon, and he landed on the sandy ground. Mother did not know Bill was gone until she gathered the children for the midday meal. Mother set off with some of the children to look for Bill, but they could find no sign of him. Well, some people say Bill was just a baby when his family lost him. Others say he was 4 years old. But all agree that a group of animals called coyotes found Bill and raised him. Bill did all the things those animals did, like chase lizards and howl at the moon. He became as good a coyote as any. Now, Bill spent 17 years living like a coyote until one day a cowboy rode by on his horse. Some say the cowboy was one of Bill's brothers. Whoever he was, he took one look at Bill and asked, "What are you?" Bill was not used to human language. At first, he could not say anything. The cowboy repeated his question. This time, Bill said, "Varmint." That is a word used for any kind of wild animal.
"No, you aren't," said the cowboy.
"Yes, I am," said Bill. "I have fleas."
"Lots of people have fleas," said the cowboy. "You don't have a tail."
Yes, I do, said Bill. Show it to me then, the cowboy said. Bill looked at his backside and realized that he did not have a tail like the other coyotes.
Well, what am I then? Asked Bill.
You're a cowboy, so start acting like one, the cowboy cried out. Well, that was all Bill needed to hear. He said goodbye to his coyote friends and left to join the world of humans. Now, Pecos Bill was a good cowboy. Still, he hungered for adventure. One day, he heard about a rough group of men. There is some debate over what the group was called, but one storyteller calls it the Hell's Gate Gang. So Bill set out across the rough country to find this gang of men. Well, Bill's horse soon was injured, so Bill had to carry it for 100 miles. Then Bill met a rattlesnake 50 feet long. The snake made a hissing noise and was not about to let Bill pass. But after a tense minute, Bill beat the snake until it surrendered. He felt sorry for the varmint, though, and wrapped it around his arm. After Bill walked another 100 miles, he came across an angry mountain lion. There was a huge battle, but Bill took control of the big cat and put his saddle on it. He rode that mountain lion all the way to the camp of the Hell's Gate gang. Now, when Bill saw the gang, he shouted out, "Who's the boss around here?" A huge cowboy, 9 feet tall, took one look at Bill and said in a shaky voice,
"I was the boss, but you are the boss from here on in."
With his gang, Pecos Bill was able to create the biggest ranch in the Southwest. Bill and his men had so many cattle that they needed all of New Mexico to hold them. Arizona was the pasture where the cattle ate grass. Pecos Bill invented the art of being a cowboy. He invented the skill of throwing a special rope called a lasso over a cow's head to catch wandering cattle. Some say he used a rattlesnake for a lasso. Others say he made a lasso so big that it circled the whole earth. Bill invented the method of using a hot branding iron to permanently put the mark of a ranch on a cow's skin. That helped stop people from stealing cattle. Some say he invented cowboy songs to help calm the cattle and make the cowboy's life easier. But he is also said to have invented tarantulas and scorpions as jokes. Cowboys have had trouble with those poisonous creatures ever since. Now, Pecos Bill could ride anything that ever was. So, as some tell the story, there came a storm bigger than any other. It all happened during the worst drought the West had ever seen. It was so dry that horses and cows started to dry up and blow away in the wind. So when Bill saw the windstorm, he got an idea. The huge tornado kicked across the land like a wild bronco. But Bill jumped on it
without a thought. He rode that tornado across Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona, all the time squeezing the rain out of it to save the land from drought. When the storm was over, Bill fell off the tornado. He landed in California. He left a hole so deep that to this day it is known as Death Valley. Now, Bill had a horse named Widowmaker. He got that name because any man who rode that horse would be thrown off and killed, and his wife would become a widow. No one could ride that horse but Bill. And Widowmaker, in the end, caused the biggest problem for Pecos Bill. You see, one day, Bill saw a woman. Not just any woman, but a wild, red-haired woman riding a giant catfish down the Rio Grande River. Her name was Slewfoot Sue, and Bill fell in love with her at first sight. Well, Bill would not rest until he had asked for her hand in marriage, and Slewfoot Sue accepted. On their wedding day, Pecos Bill dressed in his best buckskin suit, and Sue wore a beautiful white dress with a huge steel spring bustle in the back. It was the kind of big dress that many women wore in those days, the bigger the better. Now, after the marriage ceremony, Slewfoot Sue got a really bad idea. She decided that she wanted to ride Widowmaker. Bill begged her not to try, but she had her mind made up. Well, the second she jumped on the horse's back, he began to kick and buck like nothing anyone had ever seen. He sent Sue flying so high that she sailed clear over the new moon. She fell back to earth, but the steel spring bustle just bounced her back up as high as before. Now, there are many different stories about what happened next. One story says Bill saw that Sue was in trouble. She would keep bouncing forever if nothing was done. So he took his rope out, though some say it was a huge rattlesnake, and lassoed Sue to catch her and bring her down to earth. Only she just bounced him back up with her. Somehow the two came to rest on the moon, and that's where they stayed. Some people say they raised a family up there. Their children were as loud and wild as Bill and Sue were in their younger days. People say the sound of thunder that sometimes carries over the dry land around the Pecos River is nothing more than Pecos Bill's family laughing up a storm.
The toughest river west of the Alamo.
Once there was a drought that spread all over Texas, so to sunny California he did go. And though the gag is kind of corny, he brought rain to California. That's the way we got the Gulf of Mexico.
So yippee-yi-yay, yippee-yi-yo, for the toughest river west of the Alamo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for more stories and information from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.